Song Travels explores the journey singers and songs take together. This program is made possible by the National Endowment for the Arts and NPR.
Hi, I'm Michael Feinstein.
And I'm Bette Midler.
Yes, you are.
Yes, ma'am.
The Divine Miss M is my guest today on Song Travels. Star of stage and screen and everything else, Bette Midler has paved her glittering path with Grammys, Emmys, Golden Globes, a Tony, and two Academy Award nominations.
Two Tonys.
Thank you very much for
that.
Okay. Her music is popular the world over, and she is always in demand. Bette Midler, welcome to Song Travels.
I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for doing this. I've wanted so much to talk to you because you are one of the most musically eclectic people I know. Your first recording was unlike anything else that had hit the market in, was it 1972? I mean, what
yeah.
you did. I mean, that's amazing. How did you do that?
Well, I've always sung music that I loved, or rather, I used to sing music that I loved. Then I sort of got off the path in the 70s, the late 70s, singing stuff that the label said I should sing. And that was not good for me. I should have just stuck with music that I loved. You know, they sort of like to put you in a box and narrow your field of vision, and that, unfortunately, that's what happened to me. But the truth is that I think music is fantastic. Every culture in the world makes music. Music means so much to so many people, actually more than it ever did in the history of the world before. Mm. And I think that there's so much talent and there's so many different kinds of music, and I love it all. I don't discriminate. I just think it's all great.
So where did this eclectic nature come from?
Well, I lived in Hawaii my whole life. I was born in Hawaii, and I lived there until I was 19 years old. And it was sort of like a crossroads. You heard all kinds of music. You heard all kinds of Eastern music from, you know, Japan. You heard, you know, Hawaiian music. You heard music from Samoa. You heard Tahitian music. You heard pop radio, which was an import from America. We always got everything late. But, you know, we were out in the middle of the ocean. We were the most isolated place on Earth. You know, little dots out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. So it wasn't hammered at you all the time the way it is now. You really had to seek music out.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today we're going to listen to a lot of stuff.
It's a lot. But because I have a kind of a researcher's soul in a way, and in a way, I use music like we use the internet. One link brings you to another link, and from that link you move on to another. So one kind of music, you know, if you used to turn the records around, you would read the liner notes, and you would say they would mention this player, or they would mention that vocalist, or this arranger. And from there, you would go on and you would find that person's music, or you would seek it out. And that's kind of what I did. And I kept my vinyl. I have thousands of records.
And we have a turntable here. We are actually going to be playing Honest
to
God vinyl.
So we're hipper than hip.
That's right. Everything old is new again. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, many of these things we're only going to excerpt in order to be able to fit in the totality.
I brought some things that I was very struck by the first time I heard them. But the first time I heard some of these records, I was moved to tears. So while I would listen to them now and probably roll my eyes at my naivete, I must say that I brought some of the things that really set me on my path, you could say.
Well, one of the things that you've chosen that you want played first is something that certainly set me on my path, too. When I discovered Spike Jonze, it was absolutely life-changing. I'd never heard anything like it. And even though these recordings are from the 40s, they are so vibrant and so vital.
So vibrant, so energetic. They just come jumping out of the speakers at you. And I subsequently got his videos.
Right,
his
from TV, those TV
and
things.
I'm telling you, this guy, it was as funny as they came. He was wicked, he was sly, he was mischievous, and everybody around him was just as good as he was. And so you look like, you know it's wacky, but it's such a standard of wackiness.
Right.
It's like the bar is so high. And we love him. We love him to bits.
So we're going to listen to Spike Jonze, an excerpt of his biggest hit, Cocktails for Two.
Fantastic.
In some secluded rendezvous that overlooks the avenue, with someone sharing a delight, chat, this and that, and cocktails for two, as we enjoy a cigarette. to some exquisite chansonnette. Two hands are sure to slyly meet beneath a serviette with cocktails for two. My head may go reeling, but my heart will be obedient with intoxicating kisses for the principal ingredient. Most any afternoon at five, we'll be so glad we're both alive. Then maybe fortune will complete her plan that all began with cocktails for two.
Joel Gray's dad.
Mickey Katz.
Mickey Katz.
He did that.
But he was part of Spike Jonze's.
Yeah, he did those
troupe.
Guttural sounds.
He did all that nonsense. And he, of course, had a band of his own. And he sang things like Herring Boats Are Coming, Mitt Bagels and Lox.
Born on a mountaintop in Palestine, raised on Lox and Manischewitz wine.
My husband brought that into the
they
marriage.
They called him Davy Klein. Mickey Katz, yes.
Oh, Mickey Katz.
When I was growing up, we had a Mickey Katz record, The Borscht Jester is what it was called.
Well, now we're getting into a whole other...
That's the whole other thing. Well, ethnic music. Ethnic music is very important in both of our lives, and you were raised with Hawaiian music.
I was raised with Hawaiian music, and once I left town, of course, I left town when I was 19. I came to New York, and then, of course, my life changed. But I have the bedrock of my musical education was really in Hawaiian music. And I always used to say that the men sounded like women and the women sounded like men, which is a generalization to make, and it's not really true. But my favorite of all the vocalists was a woman named Genoa Ke'ave. And she was so beloved. They called her Auntie Genoa. And wherever there was a fair, wherever there was a carnival, wherever there was a big luau, Auntie Genoa would be there with her band. I loved her. I loved the sound of her voice. I loved the quality of it. I loved the songs that she chose. I felt that they were really, really authentic, and the outpouring of love that would happen whenever she showed up. It was really something to see.
Genoa Ke'ave. God, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That was a technique that's like, I think that that's a Hawaiian technique where there's a yodel. I found out later on that there are other people in the world that were yodeling, but it's where you flip the voice up into the falsetto and then she would hold the note for, eons and eons.
Longer than Merman.
Yeah.
Really? That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds like Western swing.
It does sound like Western swing, and Hawaiian music has a lot of Hawaiian music does sound like Western swing. They use slack key guitar, slide guitars. Yeah. They use there is the Paniolo culture there, which is the cowboy culture. So there is this link,
yeah.
And it's surprising how I don't really know how it made that leap. I guess maybe all cowboys are the same all the world over. Maybe
yeah.
Gaucho music sounds just like Paniolo music.
Yeah, in Australia, there's Australian cowboy
yeah,
music.
There we
it
have
sounds, a, it's the same.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Canadian cowboy music.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, there's something big-hearted about it, energetic, joyful.
Honest.
Very honest. Yeah.
Well, I want to sing a song for you. It's a song that was written for your film, For the Boys,
mm-hmm.
with music by Dave Grusin and lyrics by Marilyn and Alan Bergman.
Really? Have I ever heard it?
I don't know if you've heard it. Well, you must have heard it because Marilyn Allen said that you turned down the song.
Oh, I don't think I turned down the song. I went to them with my hat in my hand not so long ago, and I never got anything from them, so maybe they were paying me back.
Well, no, it wasn't that. It wasn't that. I recall that they said that it didn't fit the sentiment of what you wanted to express in the song. I think that's why it wasn't used. And it's called And I'll Be There.
Thank you.
I'll be there with you whenever the world seems far too white. Though you may not always see me, I'm right there by your side. When you're frightened and pull up the covers, though it's only a creaky stair, if the rainbows fade, don't you be afraid, for I promise you I'll be there. When the shadows come and moonlight paints pictures on the wall, and you're feeling lost and lonely, like no one cares at all, when you can't chase the demons inside you, and it's more than a soul can bear, you must never fear they will disappear. Look around you and I'll be there. Left town, you just tell me if anything hurts you, I'll make it all right, I swear. Sure as rainbows bend, my forehead. Then dream for a while, you'll wake up and I'll be there.
Ooh, I could kick myself. That is a gorgeous, gorgeous song. Well, I'm just going to copy this little piece of paper and bring it. Bring it with me
on
my way
out
the door. Thank you.
I would love to hear
you
sing that.
Thank you.
And they would too, I'm sure.
You know, it would have worked great. You know, you never know. Things happen and you make decisions that you regret later on. No regrets.
Although our love affair has gone astray. Yes,
everything's a couple of bars.
Everything's a song cue. Now, here's a song that you did use in For the Boys.
Yes, I did, and if it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have had anything for that moment. And it's a great song. It's Billy a Dick. I really enjoyed singing it. I recorded it with the late, great Billy May. It was my only, I think we did a couple of sides for that record. And it was my only interaction with him, and he was so sensational. And he's still my favorite, one of my favorite arrangers. I have two or three, you know, the triumvirate, the trio,
yes.
Gordon Jenkins, Nelson Riddle, and Billy May. They're my favorites.
Yeah, all the Capitol guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was sensational.
Sensational.
Well, let's listen. Billy a Dick.
Billy a Dick. while I'm undressing, saying my prayers and lightly confessing. I can hear hard licks from a set of drums upstairs. Well, it couldn't be Johnny, cause he isn't there. Johnny's overseas, we know not where. But believe it or not, every night on the dot, I can hear a tenor drum say, billy-dick, billy-dick, tick-tack, when's that character coming back? When's that kid in the G.I. lid gonna choo-choo down the track? Poor old me, I'm beat as can be, and my rhythm seat started to rust. Look at these sticks trying to tick out the licks, they're covered with an inch of dust, peep a dust. Billy-dick, billy-dick, tick-tack, when's that character coming back? When's that boy with the jumping joy gonna launch that last attack? If he'll roll, roll, roll like a drumstick, chewing, chewing, chewing on a gumstick, Jack will soon have a Japanese derby and a beat like a cymbal on a music rack. Billy-dick, billy-dick, tick-tack, when's that character coming back? When's that boy with the jumping joy gonna launch that last attack? If he'll roll, roll, roll like a drumstick, chewing, chewing, chewing on a gumstick, Jack will soon have a Japanese derby and a beat like a cymbal on a music rack. Billy-dick, billy-dick, tick-tack, billy-dick, billy-dick, tick-tack,
Mom. For me, you are one of the bridges for all different kinds of music, because you did standards on your early albums, mm-hmm. along with contemporary stuff and R&B, everything mixing it all mm-hmm. up together. Mm-hmm. But another person who did that in a big way was Harry Nilsson, who did that Touch of Schmilsson in the Night album, which was iconic. And that was a period when nobody else was doing that. Yeah. And he got Gordon Jenkins and did this album of standards.
Mm-hmm. A genius. A genius.
Great
what
writer.
A voice. What a voice.
Talk about multi-generational. This is Harry Nilsson with Gordon Jenkins, who was the great arranger of the 40s and 50s, singing a song written in the teens. So this is like a whole time warp thing.
Yeah.
Harry Nilsson, For Me and My Gal.
What a beautiful day for a wedding in May. See the people all stare at the lovable pair. The bells are ringing for me and my gal. The birds are singing for me and my gal. Everybody's been knowing.
Harry Nilsson, For Me and My Gal, with Gordon Jenkins' arrangement. That's what the show is about, Song Travels, that it's a song that's 100 years old with an arranger who was famous in the 40s, working in the 70s, and yet we're listening to it now, and it's absolutely timeless in what it does.
Timeless, and I think we should be, as Americans, so proud of what we have produced in this field. I mean, it's so extraordinary and it's so rich. That's why, you know, when new kinds of music come up, like either like rap, for instance, I look at it as an evolution, as the newest wrinkle in this vast parade of music.
What and, about quality?
You know, I'll tell you something. Music reflects its time, and if this is what's going on, that's what the music is going to sound like.
Dissonant times.
Yes. So who knows what is going to happen, you know, in 10 years? We don't know. But to me, it's a passing parade, and all of it is worthy. I mean, even the most ridiculous novelty music of the 20s or the teens, or I mean, as far as recorded music is concerned, you know, when they first started making recorded music, which was in the 1890s or something, I mean, a lot of it was novelty because they couldn't believe they were sitting here listening to that
right.
It was in their house.
Yeah, it was
so,
a toy.
I find that completely fascinating. Just
me
as,
too.
You know, I do. I just find it fascinating, and I love the evolution. No matter what happens, it's always completely fascinating that people make music. They are compelled to make music. They have to make music. And of course, some are better than others. Some have more talent than others. But the thing is that it's you just can't stop it.
Yeah.
And then all this sort of like this wonderful pot that keeps getting stirred. I just find it fascinating. But what I don't do, which a lot of people do, is they dismiss the old. I don't dismiss the old. To me, I take it, I polish it up, I put it on the shelf, and I say, well, I'll get back to you in 5 minutes.
Well, it's like you did with Johnny Mercer. You recorded Skylark and Drinking Again on your early albums. Yeah. Clearly, you resonate with Johnny Mercer, so I brought something.
I think Johnny Mercer is so fabulous. And people don't know, a lot of people don't know what a great vocalist he was.
Oh, well, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, here's something special. This is an unreleased recording of Johnny Mercer and Rosemary Clooney made for her television show, and Rosemary gave this to me, doing a song that Johnny wrote called The Whatchamacallit.
Ooh.
You put the whoosie on the whatsy, attach the whatsy to the whoosie, connect the thingamajig to the thingamabob, and that'll make the whatchamacallit go.
You hook the gidgets to the gadgets, adjust the gadgets to the gidgets, unhook the dingley dang from the diddly do. That seems to sort of settle the so and so.
When the you know doesn't almost, and the gizmo never quite. Simply follow these instructions, everything'll turn out alright. You put the whoosie on the whatsy, attach the gidget to the gadget,
connect the diddly dang to the jig-a-ma-bob,
and adjust them to the thingamaso-and-so. Then sit back and watch the whatchamacallit go.
Very cute.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, great.
Very
fun.
50s. Very 50s.
So 50s.
The only time Rosemary and Johnny Mercer sang together.
Really? Oh, my goodness. What a shame.
Well, Rosemary was my second mom, and I know that you adored her as
well. Oh, my goodness, I adored her. I thought she was a genius. First of all, that voice, you know, but she was a big soul behind all that. She had such a heart. She was funny. Counts for a lot.
Yeah. She used to get in fights with her boyfriend, Dante. Eventually, they got married, but he would go on and on. She'd ask him a question, he'd go on, and she said, Dante, I asked you what time it is, not how to make a watch. I mean, she just came out with this stuff. Well, one of her contemporaries is someone else you've chosen to represent today, Anita O'Day.
Oh, I love Anita O'Day. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Yeah, I used to hear her in L.A. at the Vine Street Bar and Grill.
Never saw her live. I only saw the videos, when they're on YouTube now, of her at the Newport Jazz Festival, singing T for Two and Sweet Georgia Brown, which she takes at like triple speed. And she claimed she was high the whole time.
Yeah.
You know,
her book was called High Times, Hard Times.
High Times, Hard Times.
Anita O'Day singing T for Two. Let's listen.
Picture me upon your T for Two and Two for Two. Can't you see how happy we're going to be? We own a telephone there. Down with breaking new ways, meet a bag of sugar cake. You can take for all the boys to see. We raise a family, boy, will you go for me? Can you see how happy we can be? We three. Picture me up on your knee, tea for two and two for tea. Now can't you see how happy we're gonna be? Nobody near us, see us, hear us, friends, relays. We get vacation, won't have it. Now we own a telephone phone to hear. Now we're breaking you away from me, the bag of sugar cake you to take for all the boys to see. We would raise a family, boy, for you, a girl for me. Can you see how happy we can be with three? Picture me upon your knee with tea for two and two for tea. Now can't you see how happy we're gonna be? Nobody near us, see us, hear us, friends, relays. We get vacation, won't have it. Now we own a telephone phone. You and me, the bag of sugar cake, you to take with all the boys to see. Raise a family, boy, for you care for me. Can't you see how happy we can be?
Anita O'Day, T for Two at breakneck speed. Incredible. Well, another of the ladies that you've chosen is Pearl Bailey, who was spectacularly talented.
Terrifically talented.
Great, great comic timing. Very... Very, very self-assured in a time when she probably had to go through a lot of hardship. And an interracial marriage to drummer Louis Belson, which could not have been easy.
Yes. And she, her choice of material was always a knockout. And I do tend to really enjoy funny women. I do. I'm not going to make any bones about it. Used to like to sweep that under the rug because it wasn't hip enough. But now, I mean, I'm at the point of my life where I say, you know what? These people were so brilliant. And she was brilliant. The fact that she had the career that she had and the times that she had and that she gave joy to so many people, you know, and made a lot of people proud. Good for you, Pearlie Mae.
What would you like to play by Pearl?
Laziest Gal in Town.
Cole Porter? The laziest gal in town, Pearlie Mae, like nobody else.
I'm going to tell you something about Pearlie Mae, honey, you have never known before. Not cause I wouldn't, not cause I shouldn't, and Lord knows it's not cause I couldn't. It's simply because I'm the laziest gal in town, and I always was. My poor heart is aching. Bring home the bacon. And if I'm alone and forsaken, it's simply because, well, I'm the laziest chick in town. Oh, I'm a master being lazy, honey. Though I'm more than willing to learn how these gals get that money to burn, still every proposition I turn it down. Ooh, I push it way down. It's not cause I wouldn't, not cause I shouldn't, honey, I know it ain't cause I couldn't. It's simply because I'm about the laziest gal in town. I adore every moment of it.
That was Pearl Bailey, the inimitable Pearl Bailey. I watched Pearl Bailey on television, but she started in the 1940s, and for many people she was the successor to Ethel Waters, who is my goddess. She's one of my favorite female singers. And I discovered that you were very influenced by Ethel Waters.
I had a very good friend, and in the early days of my career, he loved music. And he's really, I sort of feel like I'm carrying his banner, because he loved all kinds of music, just like I do. He sort of trained me to listen and love everything. And one thing that he played me was this cut of Ethel Waters, which hit me right between the eyes. And it was Ethel Waters, it was a live recording, Ethel Waters singing Supper Time. Yes. Now, I knew about the song, but I didn't really put it in the place that it actually occurred. It was an Irving Berlin musical called
As Thousands Cheer,
1933. And it was based all on headlines.
Right.
And the headline was Man Lynched.
Negro man lynched. Yes.
And this, when the curtain went up, it was Ethel serving her family dinner after she had just gotten the news that her husband had been lynched. Well, in this record that we have, she breaks down and she sobs these really heartbreaking. And I didn't know that you could do that.
Mm.
So once I heard that this was something that you could do, hey.
That was it.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, it was a thing that I was unaware of. I was unaware that people went to that place when they performed, and it made a big impression on me.
This is wonderful that it exists, this live recording. Ethel Waters performing Supper Time.
Supper time, I must set the table, 'cause it's supper time. Somehow I ain't able, 'cause that man of mine ain't coming home no more. Supper time, kids will soon be yelling for their supper time. How'll I keep from telling them that man of mine ain't coming home no more? How'll I keep explaining when they ask me where he's gone? How'll I keep from crying when I bring this supper on? How can I remind them to pray at their humble board? How can I be thankful when they start to thank the Lord? Supper time, I must set the table, 'cause it's supper time. Somehow I ain't able, 'cause that man of mine ain't coming home. How can I be thankful when they start to thank the Lord? Lord, supper time, I must set the table, 'cause it's supper time. Somehow I ain't able, 'cause that man of mine ain't coming home no more.
Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Ethel Waters. Extraordinary.
What a voice.
Well, there's more on the way with Bette Midler. Our program is made possible in part by NPR and the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks. I'm Michael Feinstein, and this is Song Travels from NPR Music. We're talking to Bette Midler, Song Travels, Michael Feinstein with you. This next choice that you made, I find fascinating.
You know, in the early days, when Beyoncé was with Destiny's Child, which was a trio of girls, I love trios. I love female trios. I love them. They are the bedrock of my show, the bedrock of my life. I mean, I love them. I collect them. I think they're all great. TLC was working before Beyoncé's Destiny's Child, but TLC had they filled a niche of really, really amusing, funny, wonderful, female-centric songs. And the writer of No Scrubs also wrote this next song, Bills, 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 which Destiny's Child recorded, which I thought was so funny and so pointed, and it had a wonderful little arrangement that reminded me so much of Hernando's Hideaway. And every time it would get to that point, I would always sing Hernando's Hideaway. And I always point that out to people, but they think I'm crazy. So can play them and let the people decide.
Yeah, let's listen. Bills, Bills, Bills.
At first we started out real cool, taking me places I ain't never been. But now you're getting comfortable, ain't doing those things you did no more. You're slowly making me pay for things your money should be handling. And now you ask to use my car, drive it all day and don't fill up the tank. And you have the audacity to even come and step to me, ask to hold some money from me until you get your check next week. You're trifling,
good for nothing type of brother.
Silly me,
why haven't I found another? A baller.
When times get hard, need someone to help me out,
instead of
a scrub like you who don't know what a man's about.
So yeah, that one part does sound like Hernando's Hideaway, but that's Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to a fragment of Hernando's Hideaway so people can hear the comparison that you've made.
Okay, I hope there is a comparison. Maybe it's only in my brain.
It's called Hernando's Hideaway, ole. All you see are silhouettes, and all you hear are castanets, and no one cares how late it gets. Not at Hernando's Hideaway. Ole.
You know, I have so much music in my head, constantly playing, and I could be that I'm not exactly right about this, but it reminds me of it. And it reminds me of it because it's so amusing, because it's funny. I just love music when it's funny.
Well, speaking of great humor in music, I grew up listening to Fats Waller, whom I adored.
Worship.
He just had the extraordinary artistry and the humor. And I came to the next artist you've chosen much later in life, Louis Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
What an amazing talent this guy was.
Unbelievable.
Because like a lot of those guys, they made it look like they were just totally having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it obscured the fact that they were consummate musicians.
Yes, exactly. I agree. You can't do that stuff unless you know your stuff inside and out. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
He's wonderful. I have a lot of his music.
What's your favorite?
Caledonia, probably.
Caledonia. Let's listen. Louis Jordan, Caledonia.
Walking with my baby, she got great big feet. She long, lean, and lank, and ain't had nothing to eat. But she's my baby, and I love her just the same. Crazy about that woman, cause Caledonia is her name. Caledonia! Caledonia! What make your big head so hot? Ma, I love you just the same. I'll always love you, baby, cause Caledonia is your name.
Caledonia, Louis Jordan, and his Timpani Five. Okay, so we're talking about iconic figures in music. Billie Holiday.
Well, absolutely one of the greatest and beloved for so many reasons. And I do love her early stuff, but I have to say that had the most impact on me was the one that she made with strings with Ray Ellis.
Lady in Satin.
Lady in Satin. And yeah. I've been playing that. I've gone through, you know, half a dozen copies of it. I still have it on vinyl.
Mm.
And it's so moving, because by the time she made the record, she always wanted strings. And towards the end of her life, she got them. And her voice was gone by that time. But it didn't matter, because everything that she had to express, she expressed practically without a voice. And it's so moving. It's so moving. Everything that she had been through in her life is there in that record. And I think it's just, they're standards, but the reading of the standard, these songs that in the hands of a lesser artist would be really kind of cheap, she elevated to such a height, they become works of art. And it remains probably my favorite record that was ever made.
Wow. Well, here is Violets for Your Furs, written by Matt Dennis and Tom Adair, from Lady in Satin, Billie Holiday.
You brought me violets for my furs, and it was spring, for I'll remember. You brought me violets for my furs, and there was April. The snow drifted down on the flowers and melted where it lay. The snow looked like dew on the blossom. Summer's day. You
me a violet for my first. And there's blue in the wintry sky. You've been the violet to my first and gave a lift to the crowds passing by. You smile at me so sweetly. Since then one thought occurred that we fell in love completely the day that you brought me violets for my first.
Billie Holiday.
Billie Holiday.
You can hear her life force waning. Mm-hmm. It's a very tragic recording.
It's quite a document. I think of it more as a document than as I don't think of it as pop music. It's not that. It's something different from that.
Would
something
you put Nina Simone in that category?
I would.
Yeah.
I absolutely would, although for different reasons. You know, she was a really interesting person. I met her. She came to see me when I was playing Universal.
Wow.
The Universal Amphitheater before it had a roof. So it's the early 70s. And she came to my trailer. I had a little trailer in the back of the amphitheater, and she cried. She sat in my room and cried. And I mean, I was so overcome because I had loved her for so long.
Yeah.
She was dealing with many, many demons. Mm. But she had tremendous control of her instrument, of the piano. So she always accompanied herself in a beautiful way. But her taste was so exquisite. She sang music that was so meaningful, that was endowed with much more than you would have thought it was. Wild as the Wind. People didn't think Wild as the Wind was any big deal. And yet when in her hands, it became something.
She took a superficial lyric
and
gave it true depth.
Yes, she did.
Absolutely.
She did. She was a woman. She was full of soul. Her soul was really, really deep. She felt things to a tremendous degree. So she remains my favorite, and I have everything. I own, in vinyl, everything. And I'm very glad that I was sort of at the on the cutting edge of the Nina Simone revival.
I'll say. Let's listen. Nina Simone singing Wild as the Wind.
Love me, love me, love me, say you do. Let me fly away with you, for my love is like the wind and wild as a wind. Give
Simone, it's just great. She's just great.
The era in which she was at her height was an era full of, you know, foment and full of agitation and full of, you know, it was the civil rights movement, the time of the civil rights movement and the time of, there was so much going on in the country. And I think a lot of what she did, she turned from being a kind of a straightforward musician in the way that Nat King Cole was to someone who really was determined to bring this agitation to public notice. And I think she suffered.
Regardless of the cost.
Yeah. Regardless of the cost. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Very interesting. What a world. I shake my head all day long. I'm happy to be alive, but boy, it's a lot to take in. Speaking of a lot to take in, consider myself really, really lucky, but in my youth, you know, how bleak was my puberty in Poughkeepsie or whatever it was that Auntie Mame says.
Yes.
When she's writing her autobiography. You know, we had nothing. We were eating bread and spread and sugar. I didn't, but my friends were. Did you ever hear that sandwich? The bread and butter and sugar sandwich? Oh, my goodness. Anyway, my mother's friend gave us some records. She had upgraded her record player, and she gave us a portable record player, and she gave us an album of records, which we all played incessantly. And God forbid my parents would ever go out and buy one. And as I said, the records that she gave us a Boswell Sisters record, and she gave us a couple of instrumentals. They were all in a little red album. I still have it. The Boswell Sisters, I just could not get over that harmony. I had never really heard anything like it. Even though I listened to the radio, I had never heard anything like these kinds of harmonies. They were so close. And as it turns out, eventually I when I came to the continental United States, I saw their videos. I've seen them, and I have had a few more of their records. But I remain a fan. A stalwart fan. They were from New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
They were white girls, but they didn't sound white. They were their harmony was very close, and one of them was the piano player. Connie, I believe, was the piano player, played piano. And they were really jazzers. They could play jazz.
And it was three-part harmony and not four-part harmony. At the time, they were told, well, you can't do it in three-part harmony. They invented themselves.
Uh-huh.
And it was something that created a new sound, and then of course the Andrews Sisters copied the Boswells directly.
Uh-huh.
The early Andrews Sisters sound exactly like the Boswell Sisters.
Yes, so yes, it's indeed. So isn't it? Yeah, completely fascinating. But I'd like to play the Boswell Sisters because I really enjoy this music.
From 1931, It's the Girl.
It isn't the paddle, it's not the canoe. It isn't the river or sky that all blue. It isn't the love dreams that bring joy to you. It's the girl, it's the girl. It isn't the fruitless that you always wander to. It isn't the mountain flower or the morning dew. It isn't the love nest that brings love to you. It's the girl that makes you happy, and it's the girl that makes you blue.
You are banned, I'm banned. What a lonely world would be without them.
It isn't the song words, the song that they sing. It isn't the sunshine that makes you like rain. So what is this magic that makes all the things? It's the girl.
Boswell Sisters, It's the Girl. They were together till 1935, then they broke up. Connie continued solo, and she was in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. crippled mm-hmm. from polio mm-hmm. her whole mm-hmm. life.
But it never stopped her.
Never stopped her. Mm-hmm. There's a lady who's a hero to a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
and you told me that you knew her, and I want to know about her. Laura Nyro.
Laura Nyro was a remarkable girl. She was a New Yorker. She was a songwriter, a vocalist, piano player. She did it all. And her subject was the city of New York. And at the time that she was writing, the city was pretty beaten up.
Yeah.
But not to her. I guess it was a combination of the fact that she just had this fantastic imagination. But in her hands, the city became a glorious and wonderful place to be, full of magic and heartache anything could happen to you in the city. And she really created a city for me that didn't exist. I mean, she made me believe in New York. It was just remarkable what she managed to achieve in such a short time.
Why did you choose Eli's Coming as the track to play?
I think because it's so portentous. It talks about something on it that's on its way, and you can feel the threat or feel the danger. Mm-hmm. It is just music, so it's just. But it's more than music. It's mm-hmm. poetry.
Mm-hmm.
It's alive. Mm-hmm. It has a real longing and heartbreak and yearning in it, and it's just the whole experience of the city rolled up into one song.
Laura Nyro, Eli's Coming.
Eli's
The incredible Lauren Nero performing Eli's Coming. You know, I can't believe it, but we're almost out of time. But I have a surprise ending for you, and I hope that you like it. I don't know if you remember this, but it's from an evening in March of 1995 at the Clinton White House when we were both performing at a celebration of National Public Radio's 25th anniversary. Do you remember that?
I do.
Well, I remember it was absolutely terrific, and we found it in the archives. So here you are warming up the audience before performing The Hostess with the Mostest from Call Me Madam by Irving Berlin and channeling Ethel Merman.
Based on the life of Pearl Mesta, who was a great party giver, and in fact she was such a fabulous party giver that she was appointed ambassador to a small European country. Something like that could never happen today. Could it? Anyway, the song describes her rise to the top of Washington society. It's a very long song. And my brain is not what it once was. So I hope I don't lose, nor are my eyes. I hope you'll forgive me if I fluff. I won't fluff. I was born on 1,000 acres of Oklahoma land. Nothing grew on 1,000 acres, for it was gravel and sand. One day, father started digging in a field, hoping to find some soil. He dug and he dug and, what do you think? Oil, oil, oil! The money rolled in and I rolled out with a fortune piled so high. Washington was my destination. And now, who am I? I'm the chosen party giver for the White House clientele. And they know that I deliver what it takes to make them gel. And in Washington, I'm known by one and all as the hostess with the mostest on the ball. They would go to Elsa Maxwell when they had an axe to grind. They could always grind their axe well at the parties she designed. But the hatchet grinders now prefer to call on the hostess with the mostest on the ball. I've a great big bar and good caviar, yes, the best that can be found, and a large amount in my bank account when election times comes round. If your thoughts are presidential, you can make it, yes, indeed. There are just three things essential. Let me tell you what you need is an ounce of wisdom and a pound of gall, and the hostess with the mostest on the ball. I think I'll take a breath. I don't know how Ethel did it. Now, it might seem to you that some of these lyrics are dated. Some of them are dated, but on the other hand, some of them could have been written just yesterday. I mean, Elsa Maxwell hasn't been with us for many, many years now.
But some of them, I tell you, not one single word has been altered in this song, or as Ethel would say, not a single void. Entertaining vodka drinkers is the job they give to me. Making nice guys out of stinkers seems to be my cup of tea. What they really need behind the iron wall is the hostess who whipped the mostest on the ball. Now there's a book of regulations as to who sits next to who, but there may be complications when the blue blood's not so blue. So the priestess with the leastest protocol is the hostess with the mostest on the ball. This part really kills me. An ambassador has just reached the shore. He's a man of many loves, an important gent from the Orient to be handled with kid gloves. He can come and let his hair down, have the best time of his life, even bring his new affair down, introduce her as his wife. But she mustn't leave her panties in the hall of the priestess with the leastest, of the hostess with the mostest, the mostest on the ball.
Well, that was absolutely wonderful. It's just as wonderful as I remembered it. It's great. You're giving it your all.
I was giving it my all.
Thank you, Bette. Thank you for all of the beautiful music you've given to me and all of us through the years.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's great for me to see you again and to thank you personally for all you've done for me, because you've given me a sort of a window into music that I wouldn't have had access to. And you've just been a really good friend to me. So I want to say thank you.
Thank you, Bette.
You've been listening to Song Travels with Michael Feinstein and his guest, Bette Midler. Song Travels is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio and is recorded at Avatar Studios in New York City, with post-production in the Elaine T. Friedman Suite at ETV Radio in Columbia, South Carolina. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Andrew Shire, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager Grant Jackson. The executive producer is Kobe Hennessy. The executive in charge is Linda O'Brien. You can find out more about the artists and music on this series by visiting our website, scetv.org/songtravels. Support for Song Travels comes from NPR and the National Endowment for the Arts, ArtWorks. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at gatesfoundation.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for improving education and enrichment for children, both in and out of school, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.